produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 614. Shh, quiet Yes songs.
Hi, this is Trevor Rabin, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 614 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a few minutes' time. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. As you will hear, the title of this week's episode is a bit misleading. Mark and I have indeed been choosing some of our favourite slower, calmer songs, or parts of songs, from the extensive Yes catalogue to talk about this week. There are plenty to choose from, given the remarkable ability of Yes to create contrasting musical experiences within an album or even a single song, as I'm sure you know. See what you think of our selections and leave your own in the show notes comments for this week's episode at yesmusicpodcast.com. This week on the socials, starting with the YMP discussion group on Facebook, Stephen Schinder and his Yes Shift crew have been celebrating Trevor Rabin's birthday with a Rabin Fest of an episode, and Guy Jerome posted the beautiful poster from certain versions of The Ladder, created by producer Bruce Fairbairn, which includes many Yes icons. If you haven't heard last week's episode about this subject, have a listen. The supermassive YMP patron Joseph Cottrell added an amazing photo of a rotating dusty gas torus around an active black hole in a distant galaxy. See the post for why that's Yes related. And John Pickles showed off his polystyrene wig head, which he bought in tribute to the one on the cover of the Yes album. Super fan, obviously. Charlie Nolan spotted a Birotron advert in Beat Instrumental magazine from 1977, which is fabulous, and Brian Sullivan added an interview with John Anderson. Charlie Nolan spotted a copy of Prog magazine with 90125 on the front cover amongst the Taylor Swift blanket coverage, and he also pointed us towards the version of Owner of a Lonely Heart on Trevor Horn's Echoes album. It's an interesting version with Rick Astley singing. A bit too smooth for me, perhaps, but well worthwhile anyway. In the usual gentle and friendly rivalry between Jeffrey Mason and Doug Curran, not really, for the title of most prolific poster, here are both lists, beginning with Jeffrey's. He added, the very sad news that Annie Nightingale, the first BBC Radio 1 female DJ, died this week. Rick Wakeman saying this is his last ever solo tour, so catch it while you can. And Rick is also one of Talking Picture TV's star guests at their upcoming Festival of Film. An advert for Alan White endorsing Ludwig drums in the February 1977 issue of Beat Instrumental. A Steve Howe profile in the same issue of the same magazine. Profiles of the bartenders Julie and Tina of Blazes Club at 121 Queensgate, London, where Yes played often in their earliest days. And that's from a 1965 issue of the Mirror newspaper. And the Rolling Stone magazine interview with Billy Sherwood, gone are the days of that publication shunning all prog rock, it seems, and this interview is excellent. For his part, Doug added, happy birthday to both Trevor Rabin and John Davison. The new prog collective CD Dark Encounters from Cleopatra Records in LA, which features more prog artists than you can possibly imagine. White Bicycles, a book about London in the 1960s, including Tomorrow with Steve Howe. It's by producer Joe Boyd, for whom Steve did many recording sessions. News that on Rick's last US solo tour this winter and spring, he will be playing a new 30-minute piece of Yes themes and melodies he calls Yes Sonata. Cherry Red's 50% off sale featuring albums by Tony Kaye, Billy Sherwood, Wet and Downs, Icon, Sherwood and Kaye, Yesterday and Today, Esquire, Fernando Perdomo, Downs and others. And his 1974 quadraphonic version of Journey to the Centre of the Earth, recorded 50 years ago this week. Over on X.com, formerly Twitter, at YFFC Yeshead posted a collection of 9 different 3-inch Yes and ABWH CDs, which are lovely. And at Frandroll shared a copy of the colour supplement to Yes, the Tormato story, from Seville in Spain. Nice. Thank you to everyone who's been in contact in any way this week, including those who commented on last week's show notes. Doug Curran, Michael Robinson, Dave Watkinson, and Greg Clinton.
600. Yes. Music. 600. Yes.
Yes Music Podcast. 12 True Summers.
It's time to talk about another Yes topic this week, of course. And Mark is with me as always. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. It's a nice mild day here today, which is very rare since we've had like minus 16 and 17 the last couple of days. Now we're down to a nice balmy minus 4. So it's nice and enjoyable now.
Isn't that nice? Well, for once, we're experiencing a little bit like what you have been having, not quite as extreme, but last night was breaking records in terms of low temperatures. And I think I'm not in the worst place. Middle of Scotland and Highlands of Scotland has been the worst. Mm. That's been over 10, 11, 12, 14, minus 14 centigrade.
Wow.
I've only got down to minus 7 or 8, I think, possibly 11 last night. So not quite as bad. But yes, we're experiencing a little bit of what you have every year. So yeah, that's exciting. Anyway, on with the Yes talk from the weather talk, which is always very important every week, of course. So this week we're going to talk about the quiet parts in Yes songs, or the calm parts, or the bits that are not going full pelt, songs or parts of songs. So what we've done is we've thought about this and we've come up with four each. And I've actually come up with a list of one song per album, which we'll come back to in a minute, which could have been chosen, I think, but we'll come back to that in a minute. First of all, though, I just wanted to say why I think this is important in Yes songs, and it's that dynamic variation and contrast that I'm thinking of. You can think of several occasions in Yes within the same Yes song or within the order of the album. We'll come back to discuss that in a moment, but where there is this kind of order out of chaos. There's been a very frenetic, very loud, very exciting part of the song, perhaps. And then there's a passage, perhaps in the middle or perhaps at the end, where the music gets much calmer and much quieter, perhaps. So, yes, if it's an album that we're talking about, then sometimes in the structure of the album, you've got the Steve Howe solo. And I quite like that. Do you like those albums that feature a Steve Howe acoustic solo?
Yeah, I mean, Steve is very good at the acoustic guitar. I mean, it's like a Rick Wakeman. His strong suit is the piano in amongst his keyboard array. And for Rick, for Steve, I actually find that his strong suit seems to be the classical guitar or the acoustic guitar, where he's finger picking and stuff like that. I find that he's also a good hybrid picker as well. But I find that those little solo pieces are very good. And they seem to be one of the things that people seem to remember. Like, who doesn't know the clap, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I do enjoy that. And I feel a bit let down in a way. That's probably too strong an opinion, probably, yes. But no, I do like it when a Yes album has one of those Steve Howe solo moments in it. And the funny thing is that particularly pop acts, when I hear them on the television playing at Glastonbury or wherever, or I've actually seen a couple of pop acts in my time in concert. So I took my daughter, for example, to an Ariana Grande concert a few years ago.
Ah.
And yeah, the problem with it, and the problem with Elton John's set, and he did this amazing set with all those huge number of hits that you know all the songs, but the problem with that and the Ariana Grande stuff was that it was all very much the same. Mm-hmm. It was, okay, Elton John, yes, he's done some sad and slow and quiet songs, but even so, the sort of mood didn't change within a song. And I think that's what Yes have always been masters of, is the ability within a long structure to have a lot of that contrast and variation. So when you get something like a whole concert of pop songs and every one of them being, you know, 3.5 minutes long, it just seems a bit unvaried to me. Is that something that you recognize?
Oh yeah, it's like being hit over the head with a mallet, like constantly the same thing over and over again, like 3 minutes upbeat, very, you know, in your face. Come on, everybody, clap your hands. You know, it's all very upbeat, and by the time you're about like an hour into it, you're already like exhausted. You're like, God, can't you like put in a slow number here somewhere? Like, it's just unbelievable how sometimes these concerts are paced. But don't forget, when you're talking about people like Ariana Grande and stuff like that, they're in their 20s. So,
yes.
And same with like, you know, what's that girl?
Taylor Swift.
Yes. She did like these huge stadium tours, but she's like in her 20s, you know, so they can get away with doing this. You know, try doing a concert like that when you're 45 and see what happens.
Yes, indeed. So, I mean, that was the idea, wasn't it? I suppose partly the idea behind the long solos that acts like Yes used to be in for, and they, even the drum solo, everybody else gets a break. And so when you've got a concert which lasts 2.5-3 hours, as they used to with Yes concerts, then you've got that kind of variation for the audience, but also a bit of a rest for some of the musicians as the others do their solo.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's pretty important within the concert because, look, people like Yes, they play complicated music. Lots of bands from that 70s era that were progressive had complex pieces. And, you know, it does good to sometimes give a member of the band, you know, a little 10-minute break, you know, to kind of, you know, wash himself off, get a towel there and, you know, towel off a bit. Because, you know, you're going to get sweaty from doing this stuff. I mean, I remember hearing a lot of drummers saying that it was great when the guitar player did a little solo piece because they can, you know, dry off their, all their sticks are soaking wet and stuff like that. I mean, you know, but the thing I don't understand about most people, like the general public who don't know too much about music, whenever they hear about bands going on tour, or, you know, performing in concerts, they all say, oh, it must be such a fantastic thing. Like, they make it sound like you're going on, like, holiday to the Bahamas. It's not that simple and easy. This is actual work, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, I couldn't agree more. And when you were playing, as you've done many times, live concerts, and when you consider the track lineup for your albums, in both of those situations, do you consider, you know, dynamics and mood variation and contrast?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's one of the things that I noticed too about some of the albums that have come out later. Like one of the big things that happened in the 2000s was once the CD became an 80-minute unit, like a thing that you could put 80 minutes of music on, people started doing that without even realizing that you don't need to do that. And because think about it, that even just listening to that much music can become a bit tiresome. And if you don't pace it properly, where if you do a couple of, you know, like look at the vinyl releases. On vinyl releases, they would do like one or two, you know, big numbers at the beginning, put a kind of like a slower song in the third position. Maybe in the fourth position, they do a ballad. And then the end of the side, they would put another upbeat song. Flip the side, kind of do it all over again. Because you have to pace it. Otherwise, people will start getting ear fatigue and stuff like that. Because, you know, it's too much, especially if you're listening on headphones. If you have like a, you know, a record that's just constantly going at one pace, like we were talking about earlier, it does become fatiguing.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay, well, let's have a think about the Yes albums themselves. And as I said, I've done a little list of a slower or a quieter or a more subdued Yes song on each album. And so these are the ones that I was choosing from. So before we go through our four choices each, as I said, let's go through each album, the ones that I came up with. So on the first Yes album, which is called Yes, there's a song called Sweetness, which is very calm. On Time and a Word, Clear Days. And on the Yes album, Adventure, when we get as far as Fragile, there's Mood for a Day. And that's really the only one I could single out in a way from that album. It's not, you know, it's not a full band piece. It's one of those solo pieces from Steve Howe himself. Close to the Edge. I'm not going to tell you the bit that I've identified from this one, because this is one of mine, one of my choices. So we'll come back to Close to the Edge in a minute. Then, of course, Leaves of Green from Tales, and Soon, the Soon section from Relayer. Wondrous Stories, so I'm going for the one. Onward, and there's also Madrigal on Tormato. So that's interesting, isn't it? Two very much quieter songs on Tormato, even though quite a few people will tell you that the album's not well put together. Anyway, White Car from Drama, 90125. Interesting, not as much dynamic and mood variation as perhaps some of the other albums, but Hearts, at least at the beginning of Hearts, it's calm. Shoot High, Aim Low from Big Generator. ABWH, there were a couple on ABWH that I thought of, Birthright and The Meeting, but I went for The Meeting in the end as a possibility, because that's pretty much just Anderson and Wakeman, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a lovely song. And then on, not my favourite, but, you know, there you go, Union, Angkor Wat. Now, that's very interesting, so... Right, coming back to that later, perhaps. And then on Talk, Endless Dream, but Silent Spring, the first part of Endless Dream, because that's a proper epic, isn't it? It goes through all sorts of different contrasts and so on. Taking Keys to Ascension, both of those as a single album, Children of the Light, is perhaps a quieter one. And then Open Your Eyes, From the Balcony, nice song. And The Lather, Nine Voices, which is an interesting song, isn't it? It's been treated in various different ways, including children's choirs and so on. Soft as a Dove from Magnification. And then for Fly From Here, we're back to something like Solitaire, which was the Steve Howe solo piece again. To Ascend, I listened to To Ascend this week when I was preparing for this, from Heaven and Earth. I actually rather liked it. So there we go. That's a
wow.
good
that.
a good thing for Heaven and Earth. And then we have From a Page, which was that mini album, I suppose you could call it. The Gift of Love is a lovely song from that. Future Memories from The Quest and Circles of Time from Mirror to the Sky. So there we are. That's my long list. But let's go for your first choice, Mark, as your first quieter or song or part of a song.
Okay, so to be upfront here, I ended up selecting whole songs.
Okay.
Because there were lots of, if I was just to pick individual passages, I would have been probably pulling my hair out going through like hundreds of possible selections. So I said, let's make this a bit easier. I'll try to think of something that's like a full song that gives me that calming mood. And as you well know, Kevin, my favorite album by Yes is Relayer.
Yes.
Yes. And I've said many, many times that one of the true brilliant things that they did on this album was the way they arranged the track listing on this. Because you start the album with a grandiose masterpiece with a complete with battle sequence and everything in Gates of Delirium.
Yes.
Then you get to the haphazard, crazy jazz-influenced sound chaser where, if you know, by the end of that, you're kind of like, whoa, you know, you got to give your head a shake. It's so fantastically written that... If you were to even keep up even slightly that pace on the next song, you'd probably go bonkers. So what did they do? They put in a beautiful piece, nice and calm, starts off really softly. So To Be Over is my first selection because to me, this is one of the things that I love about that album. Like I said, it's very calming at the end. It kind of like the lyrics fit perfectly, like the whole floating down the river kind of bit to it. I mean, that's exactly what you want to be doing after going through Gates of Delirium and all that. You want to be just kind of on a little inner tube floating down the river and just chilling out. So this, to me, is a perfect example of a calming song.
Absolutely. And yes, I did listen to that this week when I was preparing for this and thought whether I should put in my long list To Be Over. And I went for Soon in the end, as it's such an archetypal moment of a longer piece. But yes, To Be Over, it's controversial in the sense that they just don't seem to want to play it in concert. And I can't really understand why. And we had that conversation, didn't we, when Patrick Mraz was with the band for the 50th anniversary. And they could have played the whole of To Be Over and that would have been fantastic. But it seems to be somewhat neglected for some reason. And I'm not quite sure why.
Well, the funny thing is, though, that Steve Howe did incorporate that song as his solo piece on a 2002 tour, I believe it was, where his solo section, he did actually do To Be Over in almost its entirety.
Well, so it can't be that. Maybe it's just not one they've got around to yet. And, of course, we've got the whole debacle about the playing the whole of Relayer on tour, which we don't
let's
need to get into.
Let's not go there.
Let's not get that loaned. All right. Brilliant. Yes, an excellent one to start with. I'm going to go back to, for my first one, I'm going to go back in chronological order to the first Yes album and the one that I mentioned, Sweetness. And I rather like this because it's a very unusual sounding Yes song. It's not really like anything else that they did on the first album or the second album, and then we get into the Yes album and things change dramatically anyway. And I love some of the aspects of it. You've got, and if you haven't listened to Sweetness for some time, it's got lovely, quiet Kay Hammond sounds at the beginning of it there and throughout. And the Squire bass line is remarkable. It's such a mobile, for such a quiet and calm song. Listen to the Squire bass line. It's going a bit mad in the background, but completely appropriately. And then you have Bill Bruford. He's doing a lot of his jazzy sorts of things. Lots of cymbals at the start. And I do love the brilliant layered backing vocals, which are going on that one as well. And I love the... Anderson sounds a bit throaty on this. A couple of songs on the first two albums I've found, Anderson sounds a bit like he's got a sore throat, but but it fits the style of this one, I think. There's not very much Peter Banks on this, interestingly, but there is, again, some really subtle wah pedal, which I think is lovely. And you can definitely float away, like you said before, about To Be Over. You can float away to Sweetness. There's a little bit of psychedelia in there, a bit of flower power. And I was fascinated to see that, although the early statistics of concerts are not wholly reliable, but in fact, it says on Forgotten Yesterdays that they only played this song 10 times live, which is a bit of a shame, I think. It does get going with a sort of ramp up in volume for a bit, but it does ebb away at the end. So Sweetness, a lovely song, I think.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, though, that you mentioned that's interesting to point out is you said that it wasn't very much Peter Banks on there. But there again, though, lies the beauty of a song like this, is because the subtle things that he did do in there adds to that sort of dynamic to it.
Yeah.
You know, if he was playing straight through guitar, maybe it wouldn't have that sort of dynamic and flow that it had if he had done that. I mean, sometimes putting in a little bit of something is better than putting a lot of something in. You know, it definitely helps with that. And, you know, look, I mean, Peter had a lot of guitar in his time with Yes. Like, whenever you see him play, he had more than enough opportunity to show his prowess on the guitar. So a moment here and there where he's kind of laid back is, I'm sure, not a big problem, I don't think.
No. Lovely song. And I should say that I'll put a sort of playlist in the show notes for this week so you can listen to our selections and suggest your own, of course. All right, then, what's your second selection, Mark?
So my second selection is a song that I remember Steve Howe saying in an interview that he found very difficult to perform with full band.
Right.
They did it in the studio, and, you know, they had their, you know, it wasn't difficult, but in the studio they probably had a slightly easier time constructing it. But when it came to playing it live, it was a little bit of a challenge, but when they get it right, which they do 90% of the time, I'm sure, it's a fantastic song. This is a song from Going for the One. And I've always loved when they play this. Every time I hear just the opening strains of Steve Howe's acoustic guitar, on this, I've always have a smile on my face because I know what's coming. Some very subtle guitar playing, some nice finger picking, some great vocals, a little bit of keyboards here and there.
Yep.
Very little bass playing, no drumming pretty much, just cymbal work and just the percussion stuff here and there.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm talking about Turn of the Century, which is one of the great songs that they've constructed. And I've always found this song to be one of those ones that is very, very relaxing. I mean, and this is not a dig at the song at all, don't get me wrong, but the first couple times I actually heard Going for the One, when that song came on, I found that I would sometimes fall asleep and then snap out of it when the organ came on from Parallels.
Oh, yes.
Because it was such a really nicely done piece. The mood is very somber on it. And even at the end, there's that do, whole piece at the end on the guitar. It's such a nice piece, and it's very relaxing. And that's the thing. If somebody kind of nods off to it, it doesn't mean that it's boring. It just means that you're just probably so fully engrossed and relaxed by the mood of it that, you know, your body just kind of shuts off for a second.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent pick. And I do think that Going for the One is one of the albums, actually, which has perhaps, you know, almost the most contrast in those songs. And if you think of Awaken, I mean, that's just absolutely packed with contrasts all the way through that as a work of, well, I think it's a work of genius. I know not everybody agrees with me, but yes, what a great pick. And one that I completely forgot about, to be frank with you, when I was thinking about this. So that's really good. And I did enjoy hearing that, and it was very well performed when I saw the three album tour some years ago. Lovely stuff. Okay, well, I'm going back a bit further again with my second choice, which is, I did not mention this one, Close to the Edge, and I've put this down on my list as the drip bit. So what I mean by that is the drip bit. So when about 8:30 into Close to the Edge, the track, the song, there is the bit where it sounds like everybody's in a cave. And there's a water which that drips. I always assume it's from the top of the cave, the ceiling of the cave, into the into a pool in the cave. So I'm sure you remember the bit I mean. And it's a fantastic sort of oasis in the middle of Close to the Edge, I find. After lots of mayhem, you've got this beautiful part, and there's everybody from Howe doing his sort of reverb-soaked sparse notes. There's a lovely mellotron in the background. And this is a 19-minute song, so they'd had the time and the space to add in this atmospheric part. Piano records, chords underneath, repeated piano chords underneath, a little sort of vamp that Wakeman starts off. And the lyrics as well, the first lyrics that you've got there are "In Her White Lace." So Howe and Squire doing vocal harmonies in the background, and lovely Anderson vocals. And one thing I love about the backing singing against John Anderson's singing is that they're doing that thing of commenting. They're singing completely different lyrics, and as if they're commenting on what Anderson is singing. So I really find this a point of reflection and rest amongst the whole song. And of course, just after this section, it builds up absolutely massively to the Rick Wakeman epic organ passage and back into the song itself. So I do love that bit when it comes up.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very classic part, well known to the Yes fans. And I never thought about that water dripping. And, you know, now I'm going to be hearing that. All I'm going to hear probably now is that drop, drop. Like water dropping there, and I'll envision the band with these hard hats on, with the light on the top there, like cave dwelling there, looking around for something. Maybe they're looking for that you know, that circular logo from Elias there. They're digging in the cave looking for it.
Yes.
So absolutely. Yeah, but it's a great piece. Definitely a great selection. Definitely something that's very soothing. And I remember that one of the first times I took one of my friends, he was a singer in my band, we went to go visit our bass player who lived about an hour away from me. And we went to go see him at his farm. And in my car, we listened to Close to the Edge. Mm. And when that part came up, he had never heard it before. And he kind of looked at me, he thought it was kind of interesting. He liked it. And then the next time when we were coming back home, I had a cassette player. So it was just the cassette that we had in the car was that. On the way home, Close to the Edge came on again. When that part came up again, he was fast asleep. So it had kind of chilled him out to the point of, you know, relaxation. So there you go. Another great example.
Yes. Isn't that great? Yes. So everybody will now know this as the drip bit. So the that's good. Bit. Okay. Right. What's your next choice then?
So now I'm going to go back in time to near beginnings of the band. Mm-hmm. And a song that I find is a great example, again, of pacing, a great example of doing a track listing very smartly. That's a correct word, smartly. Mm. And just showing that they know how to construct a decent track listing. The album Time and a Word, on this album, the closer, which is Time and a Word, is another great example of a song in its whole that's very relaxing, very calming. It's a very subtle piece. The only thing of this song that kind of irks me is at the beginning, that untuned guitar that whoever played that acoustic guitar at the beginning, yes, that somebody needed to show him how to use a guitar tuner properly for that part, probably. But other than that, it's a great song. And it's a song that they used and played for a while. I mean, look at the Keys to Ascension shows. They actually did a great version of Time and a Word at that time.
They did.
And it's a song that I think was great to have in their catalog, because after a couple of intense numbers, they can pull that out and kind of calm everybody and, you know, put the flow back into it a little bit more laid back, right?
Yeah.
And I definitely think it's a good number. Is it their best song? No, not probably not their best song, but it's definitely one of those songs that talks about what we're talking about here, which is a very calming, soothing sort of song.
Yeah. I'm always surprised that it's not better known, actually, Time and a Word, because I've always loved it. And it's one of those ones that you could have, you know, it could potentially go on forever, couldn't it? Repeating the chorus like Hey Jude, you know, that kind of a song. And I seem to remember reading somewhere that perhaps John Anderson even had that idea. I think it's David Foster playing the guitar in the background.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, so he could have done with a bit of tuning there. But no, it's a song I really like, and I think it always goes really well live, as you've said there, each time they've done it. And again, not one I would have chosen myself, but I see very much where you're coming from. It is a relaxing and sort of meditative song when you get into it. Excellent. Okay, right. Well, I'm now going to lose a lot of friends, and because I'm going to choose Anchor What?
Yay! Oh, here we go.
Now, the thing about Angkor Wat is that it's not really a Yes song, is it? It's really a John Anderson solo song, because there's clearly no Squire, no Howe, I wouldn't say, no Rabin, no Kay, no Bruford. I don't think there's anybody else on it apart from John Anderson and Jonathan Elias. I think they put it together themselves. I certainly don't think Wakeman is anywhere near it. Particularly if you listen to some of the ways that the keyboards are done. And that doesn't bother me, because I really like it. And there are an awful lot of keyboards. It's very quiet. It sounds very sort of exotic in the use of instrumentation. And I love the subtle melody. And I think John Anderson is on top form, really. And clearly it's a protest type song, isn't it? But I think it's effective as it is. And there's some percussion like a rainmaker or something, very, very typical John Anderson in there. And I think it does evoke a feeling of that. It's a temple complex, isn't it, Angkor Wat? And again, I know some people really hate it, but I do love the poetry at the end, and especially the way it's left on its own. The music fades away completely, and you just have this beautiful, beautiful voice. Cambodian poetry, absolutely lovely. There is some backing vocals in it, and perhaps Squire and Rabin, maybe you could make a case for it being them on the background there. But I think it's more likely that it's some of the people who are credited on Union, people like Francis Dunnery, who I think basically just happened to be around the the recording studios at the time. But yes, certainly very calm. You could argue that it's not a Yes song, as I say, but there we are. That's my pick.
Well, I mean, this has always been a kind of interesting song. I think that on the CD, Angkor Wat was on there, and I think on the vinyl, I think they might have removed the song, I think, if my memory serves me correctly. But, you know, the lyrics are very, very Anderson. Star point to signal our endlessness. Star point to signal this evermore. Star point to compass. We look to the north. To return to the center, Angkor Wat. Now, according to this, what I have here, the songwriters are credited to John Anderson, Jonathan Elias, Rick Wakeman, and William Scott Bruford. So, apparently Bill had some in it. I don't know what it could have been, but am I correct about the vinyl?
Yes, I've just got the vinyl down from my collection here, and indeed, Angkor Wat is not there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that that list of composers, it was purely for sharing out the royalties.
Yeah, I would think so.
I'd really be surprised if if they were involved in that. After having said that, of course, there'll be a comment on the show notes for this week with someone telling me I'm completely wrong about that. But I don't care. I still like it. I still like it. No. I still think it's Jonathan Elias and John Anderson. And for what it is, I really enjoy it.
Now, one last thing before we move on. One thing I was a little disappointed about as far as the song went is that in the credits, like in the lyric sheets, when you look inside the booklet when you buy the album, that they never really had any sort of translation of what that girl was saying.
No,
I mean, I would like to know what she was saying. I mean, maybe it would you know, give it more context to the song, right? Knowing what she was saying. Because other than that, it's just this voice that comes out of nowhere, and you have no idea what they're trying to say in it. So I think that would have been smart of them to kind of had some sort of translation in there.
Absolutely. I'm sure it's possible technologically nowadays to feed that into a translation engine somewhere on the internet. Somebody presumably has done that already, I'm sure. So leave a comment on the show notes if you've seen the meaning to that poem, which I like very much. All right. One more each. So over to you, Mark.
All right. So for my last one, and I was mentioning to Kevin off air that I was having a little bit of an internal struggle as to which one I was going to pick for the last one. But I have decided, and it's a song that comes off of a record that I've said many, many, many times on our lovely podcast that it's a record that is, in my mind, a return to form for Yes, which is The Ladder. And I think that once again, and if you're noticing here within my selections, three of the four songs I've picked are all closers of a record.
Mm.
And this one is no exception. They were talking about Nine Voices. I think this song is another great example of Steve Howe and that fantastic Portuguese guitar that he uses to evoke a mood of calmness. The backing vocals in this song are fantastic. I think it's one of their better constructed backing vocal sections on a song. And again, not a lot of drumming and stuff like that in there. You know, a lot of acoustical instruments, a little bit of bass here and there. I don't even think there's very much even keyboards going on in this, if you think about it. Maybe things here and there, a little bit here and that, some flourishes. But it's definitely an acoustic-centric piece. I've always loved it. I think John Anderson does a great job with the vocals and with the lyrics in this, I think, are really well done. Once again, hats off to the late Bruce Fairburn, who made it a point of telling John to stop with the gobbledygook and make some real lyrics that people can actually follow and, understand their meaning of. And this song, I think, is the best example of having a bit of John in there and having a bit of the Bruce Fairburn idea in there. It kind of met perfectly in the middle with this song.
Yes, yes. I do love it as well. And it certainly was, as I think I said when I went through my long list, it's been used and rearranged, and it does seem very, very attractive to particularly to young voices. I've seen more than one YouTube video of young voices singing Nine Voices, and they performed it, didn't they, at Bruce Fairburn's funeral service.
Yeah.
So it certainly does mean a lot to the members of the band who were on that record, and it means a lot to Yes fans as well. I think it's a lovely one. And yes, if you do read the lyrics, you can understand them. And it's a retelling, I think, isn't it, of various different mythical and legendary stories all sort of melded into one. Yeah, lovely, lovely song. Okay, brilliant. Last one then. Okay, so I've gone for Circles of Time from the latest album, Mirror to the Sky. Because I wanted to put this one in because I think that the journey that John Davison has gone on with his songwriting with Yes is quite remarkable. And I think this is the culmination of what he's done so far. It's very much his song. And we had a lovely conversation with John when he came on some months ago now, 2023, wasn't it? And he's clearly really enjoying writing Yes music now. We know from a recent Billy Sherwood interview that they are very much working on the next album, and hopefully they'll go even further with this next album settling into songwriting and studio work together. And Circles of Time, I think, is a lovely piece. And I think John is really in his element here, John Davison. And his lyrics before sometimes were a little bit sort of jolting and some bits stuck out a bit, I thought. But here, I think he gets it absolutely right. And I also think that the production is good here. Sometimes, again, in the past, John's voice hasn't been given quite the treatment I think it deserves in the studio. And I think it's very, very good here. I think also you can hear the link between Howe and Davison on this song. And again, as you've just said, this is a very effective end to the album. So it's another one. So there seems to be a bit of a trend in Yes albums to end it with a quieter, more calm song. I think Circles of Time is catchy. You know, you can go away humming it, which is, for a Yes song, is not always the case, but certainly this one is catchy. And the backing vocals by Davison himself, I think, is nice. And the combination of acoustic guitar, slide guitar, and I think John Davison is also doing some strumming of acoustic guitar in there as well. There are some touches of keyboards, but nothing overbearing. I think it's just right. And if you listen out carefully towards the end, I think there's just a moment of Billy Sherwood's backing vocals in there. And it all sort of culminates in a really good Howe acoustic solo for me. So Circles of Time, I do like it very much.
Yeah, I've always been a big supporter of this song. I remember when we did our album review of this, I've said from the very beginning that I thought this was a very strong point on the album. Yes seemed to like having these kind of songs. I mean, I'll refer back to Holy Lamb on Baby Generator, which I think is a very... not a good song in my opinion. I think I find that one a little tacky, but this is a much stronger version of that idea, I kind of find. And the lyrics are fantastic. I mean, just I'll refer to this one part here. Win or lose, that clock on the wall, like the shadow of a noose, is a ticking time bomb, orchestrating and dictating our every move. So once again, I think that he's, like you've said, he's really kind of stepped up his lyric writing, even like this part here, across the polar night, the blue twilight, time circles, time circles. It's very well
really
done.
Nice.
The imagery in his lyrics now have become much stronger now, I think. And, you know, it's not easy to step into John Anderson's shoes. Like, most people who love Yes kind of like his sort of gobbledygooky kind of, like, you know, mystical lyrics that don't make sense, where he's talking about his kidney or his liver or something. You know, people like that stuff. So, and when you come into it, you have to kind of feel his way through this. And I think that now he's very comfortable with it. And this song, again, shows that. And again, a great pick by you, Kevin, because this is a great closer to a record. And it just kind of gives you that nice calm at the end, because you just finished coming off of the title track, which is 14 minutes long, full of orchestra and stuff like that in there. So to have this piece at the end is a great kind of soothing thing to have at the end. And yes, you were right. John does play a lot of acoustic guitar on this song, actually.
Yeah. And I think that it shows, as I said, the artistic link now between Howe and Davison is very strong. And you can even see them working on more solo projects together, I think. I think that would work very well and is a possibility. Brilliant. Okay, well, those are our four picks each, but don't take our word for it. Please put your ideas on the show notes in a comment for this week at yesmusicpodcast.com, where you'll find all the show notes for all the episodes right back through time to 2011. Yeah, good stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Yes Music Podcast, 600 episodes.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. Producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller and Jeffrey Griselius. And half the patrons are Jim Morrison, John Pickles, Declan Logg, Gary Betts, Alan Begg, Michael Handahan, Barry Gorski, Steve Perry, Doug Curran, Martin Kjellberg, Todd Dudley, Rachel Hadaway, Lind, Paul Hales, Craig Estenis, Mark James Lang, Steve Rode, David, Bob Martellotta, John Holden, Stephen Lamb, Dem, Fred Barringer, Scott Colombo, Chris Bandini, David Hayden, and John Thompson. Naturally, as always, thank you very much indeed to those patrons. If you'd like to join them to help keep the lights on here at YMP Towers, please do head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week. In the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via x.com, Facebook, or Instagram. And if you're that way inclined, do check out my other podcast, where I'm writing 52 choir anthems during 2024. Head over to anthem52.com for that. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.